Congressman Mike Rogers, who is on the line. Congressman, thanks so much for coming back with us.
Hey, you're welcome. Thanks, Tony.
Where are you as we speak?
Well, I am working on the final portion of the authorization for the 17 intelligence bills.
Ah, well, give us a little insight.
Well, I think we have, I've been working with Senator Feinstein, who is the chair of the Senate Intel Committee, the senator from California.
And you are the House Intel Committee chairman, so we want to let folks know that.
Yes, so we're working together. I know that, matter of fact, the first day we struck a deal, it was the day of the earthquake, so we thought that maybe by a Republican and a Democrat agreeing on something.
The world shook.
So we had a good laugh out of that, but we've been working very hard on trying to put all the final touches on it. It is a significant amount of money. We're trying to get it right. I'm paying attention to every dime of it. I work well with Senator Feinstein. I work well with my Democrat counterpart on the committee, the House committee, Dutch Ruppersberger from Maryland. And so we've all sat down and spent a lot of long time in windowless rooms trying to work out the details, and I think we're almost there. So I'll put the finishing touches on it today, and it will be up on the House floor next week.
All right. Instead of where's Waldo, I'm going to ask you, where's Muammar Gaddafi?
Well, there's a lot of places he can hide. I will tell you that we are much better about trying to find somebody like Muammar Gaddafi than we were, say, 10 years ago or in 2003 under Saddam Hussein. So I don't, it still is a difficult thing. It's a very large country. It's pretty sparse in places and lots of places to hide. But more importantly, his regime is crumbling, if not crumbled. And so they can start the process of governance. My argument here, Tony, is that, yeah, they're going to get him eventually. It's just a matter of time. It's what happens in the next intervening weeks. Does an insurgency start to develop amongst his hardcore regime elements, his protection forces that are still around? And that would be, deadly. That's exactly what happened in Iraq. So we have some experience there. We're providing advice and counsel to our NATO allies, to the rebels who are trying to form a government about, hey, don't do these mistakes. And here's some positive things that you can do to try to cut this thing off.
When we talk about Libya, we wonder who's going to lead that country. They have a lot of deadly weapons over there, their infrastructure, their monetary systems. From your perspective, I know you come from a security angle, but what can NATO, what can the U.S. do to help secure all these questions?
Did you say secure the weapons or the...
To secure the country, if you will.
Country, yeah. I don't think we need boots on the ground. There's several things we can do, and I think you have to do a lot of them all at the same time. The one place where I do believe it is in U.S. interests to have people there, and I'm not talking the big army or anything like that, is we have very special capabilities when it comes to securing and accounting for and rendering safe chemical weapon stockpiles and missiles and other things, and I think that would be absolutely in our United States national security interests to participate in that fully with our NATO partners and the Transitional Council in Libya. And I think they'd welcome that help. So we should be doing that. At the same time, we have seized money that we can give back. We've learned you can't give it back in big chunks. You have to kind of parcel it back so that they're spending it in the appropriate way. And it's their money, not our money. It's money that Muammar Gaddafi had overseas in U.S. banks, and we seized it. That's really their money. We should give it back. And we can help get their oil running again. It was really an oil economy before all of this happened, and it probably will be an oil economy for some time after, in getting it up and running so that they have the resources to rebuild their government and their country is going to be incredibly important because we're certainly not going to write them a check.
What is going on with China? It seems they are really flexing their muscle when it comes to showing off how they're building, especially their Air Force and their Navy. But they seem to really be flexing and wanting to show the world that they are a huge military player.
They want to be the counterweight. They want to be the next superpower that counterweights the United States. They say that in their public pronunciations and whatnot. They've invested in their Navy. They're investing in their Air Force. They're They also issued a white paper a few years ago that said they want to build a Navy that could compete with the U.S. Navy anywhere in the world. And it's really an interesting thing because China, I think, is very misunderstood. I know a lot of businesses think it's the gold rush and they're trying to get out there and get a part of those markets. But it is still a totalitarian-type state in that the Communist Party still rules, and most of the businesses have to be pushed through the Communist Party. And what I always find interesting in this is the People's Liberation Army there, the PLA, of which is the communist government's military, its mission statement is not to defend China or the people of China. It is to defend the Communist Party of China. So you have all of these interesting dynamics, and that's why you see this chest thumping and this posturing. And so it's not completely a free market economy at all. Matter of fact, I argue it's not at all. And so you've got this a country that wants to stand on par with the United States, and they're trying to show the world you got to pay attention to us too.
I wanted to ask you about jobs. We talk about that a lot, even though it appears right now the unemployment rate is somewhat flat. It is a fact that a lot of folks have stopped looking for work. I was just talking with Gilda Jacobs, and she was telling me how we need to funding to retrain a lot of workers for all these IT jobs that are available in the clusters that we have throughout the state. We talked about jobs the last time you were on, short term, 90 days, 6 months. What can be done? I know the president's going to speak on this soon. What's your take on this?
Well, again, the small businesses have been struggling because the bigger businesses in America have frozen their money, and it's fascinating that they have about $2 trillion in private capital sitting on the sidelines. In other words, these companies are holding back on spending this money, and it's the largest balance sheets we've seen since they've keeping track of this stuff, and I argue, why? Well, there is so much uncertainty. We don't have to have big government programs fix this problem. What we have to do is put a little certainty in their lives. They have no idea what it's going to cost them to hire somebody next month. You have the health care regulation that's coming out that's proving to be far more expensive and more restrictive than people said it was going to be. You have new EPA rules that's going to take 20%, think of this, 20% of all the megawatts of electricity produced in the country offline, which means electric rates are getting more expensive, not less expensive. All of that's happening right now all at the same time. Oh, and by the way, they keep talking about, well, we're going to have to raise taxes on business. We're going to have to raise taxes on business. Their business is bad, and they're horrible, and we should get more of their money. All of that uncertainty means they're not hiring people. So I've said, listen, why don't we just have a moratorium on new regulation? They've had $62 billion worth of cost in regulation just this year alone. Stop that. Just say we're not going to do that for 2 years. We're not going to raise your taxes for 2 years. We're going to have an energy plan that produces American energy and American jobs so that you can compete worldwide. I think you would see a funneling of that private capital back into the workplace, which means business is better, people are spending, people are back to work, and we'll never solve our debt problem if we don't get people back to work.
And finally, let's talk about Michigan State University and their facility for rare isotope beams. I know they want to push up construction. They think that it could save them a lot of money. It's a $615 million research facility. I know you've been trying to help find funding for that. Talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, I have always believed that one of the legitimate expenditures of money from the federal government is basic science research. I mean, we have always done it. It has been valuable in so many ways, both from health reasons and economic reasons. And this is science that should be led in the United States, and it got selected to be built at Michigan State University. That's a good deal. Now would be the wrong time to pull the plug. So we hope that we can find some funding. It's all about priorities. I mean, we can't spend everything. Everything can't be a priority, and we can't continue to spend the way we are. Basic science research is important for this country, and so we're going to try to find some money. I don't know if we'll get them all that they want, but we're going to work hard to get them what they need.
As I know, you're a very humorous guy, and you appreciate humor. Many would say Labor Day weekend and Republicans would be an oxymoron, but what do you think about when you think about the Labor Day and the weekend and what Labor Day means to Michigan?
Well, that's because Republicans are working.
Touche.
You know, it is important. And you know, Labor Day was originally about organized labor, but, you know, that represents about 15% of the total workforce. Just because you're not a union member doesn't mean you are not busting your fanny trying to put food on your table and pay your bills at the end of the month. And it's really important in America that we celebrate the things that have made us great and will continue to make us great, and that is people who get out there and get it done. And it's all about hard work. There is no short way except through hard work to success. And that's really what we celebrate, and that's why we have the greatest and the largest middle class in the world, and that's why the rest of the world's trying to steal it from us right now. And so, yeah, I think it's important that we stop and we pause and we say, yeah, it is labor and doing things right and working hard that made this country great, and this is a weekend where we can pause for a minute and celebrate that.
Congressman, enjoy your weekend. Thanks so much for your time.
Hey, thanks, Tony.